Greetings and welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by the boss, John Roerink, Jack Spencer, Mike Malott, and Jacob Kanzler. A little later, Representative Sheldon Neely. He is the head of the Legislative Black Caucus. We're going to be speaking about the director of the state police, Colonel Etu, who found herself in a bit of hot water. Did I tell you, Jacob, that I looked for her Facebook page on Friday and it did not exist? I couldn't find it.
Well, she does have a, as her spokesperson said, she has a private Facebook profile. It's only viewable by her friends. So to you, it might appear as though it doesn't exist at all.
Oh, no, but this is how you do it. This is a sneaky way to do it. So I went to one of her friends, and on Monday, I went through one of her friends to find her page. But then on Friday, I went through the same friend, and the page does not exist.
So you're saying she might have taken it down.
Might have taken it down. Maybe a week too late, Mike.
Yeah, once the genie's out of the bottle, you can't put it back.
All right, so here's the question on the table, guys. Did she botch her response on this? John, let me start with you.
Well, let's begin with the fact that she botched by reposting the thing to begin with. But yes, she botched her response. I think there should have been a little more heartfelt apology. I think there should have been some penalty immediately out of the gate from the administration. Look, you can't have that kind of job and not understand that what you put out there on social media, whether it's a private social media account or not, is going to be watched, and it's going to have implications for how not only you but your agency is perceived.
What do you think, Jack? Did she botch how she handled this?
I first of all agree with John. I don't know how you put the toothpaste back in the tube once you've made the original bad decision. I guess my answer would be no. I don't think she botched how she responded, because I'm not sure there was any good way to respond.
But the problem is now there's this internal thing going on, and how long is it going to go on? And how many more days are we going to have to look at and think about this story? If there had been a penalty on the administration's part, right out of the gate, I think it would have, you know, like we talked about earlier, set the tone, and would have dampened the story.
And as it is, this story has not been dampened in any way, Jacob. In fact, it continues to go on. We're going to go a week out on it, and it probably won't end until we find out what the Michigan State Police is going to do as far as a penalty as part of its internal investigation.
It's had some staying power because the colonel weighed in on a debate that's going on across the nation that really cuts to the core for a lot of people, that touches issues of race, of community police relations, what the national anthem and the flag and standing for the flag mean to different people. And so that's why it's kind of has staying power. And you've seen more and more of our elected officials weigh in. I mean, I think our congressional members are filing in each day. And so certainly that's had the impact that it has in terms of her weighing in on this. And then you also take into account just the state of police relations with people of minorities and the shooting of unarmed black people going on across the nation. And then also the incident with Damon Grimes in Detroit that involved a state police trooper. So all these things are kind of swirling in and why it's generating so much outrage and concern from the Legislative Black Caucus in particular.
Do you think that Colonel Etu is still in her position a month from now, Mike?
Oh, yeah. I think she survives it, but I think she's going to have to have she's going to have to meet with the Legislative Black Caucus. She's going to have to sincerely put this to rest. She's going to have to let them know that she is not biased herself. She's going to have to do some mea culpas here.
Now, from a political standpoint, Jack, for some folks like Tom Barrett who have jumped on this, Rick Jones, they have come out in support of Colonel Etu and against people who are taking a knee, locking arms during the Pledge of Allegiance. That actually works for their constituents. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, you can just take a look at the Senate debate. Nobody came out on either side of this thing that was representing a district where whatever side they took, it wasn't the right side for their district. I mean, you could just go, you could almost take a look at which district people were from when they stood up, at which side they were going to be on, because frankly, this is something almost everybody, has some kind of opinion on. I don't think you're going to change anybody's opinion on it, but this is a ready-made issue within the district, and I assume anybody who's meeting their constituents right now, it's probably one of the first things that are being brought up, because it's playing that way nationally. So, boy, you run into somebody, if you're a lawmaker, you run into them at the grocery store, I'll guarantee they're being asked about this.
What does that say about our state, about our country, John?
Well, it says exactly what we've known all along, that this is a divided country, that it's a very divisive issue. It also demonstrates, when just from a standpoint of the future of the NFL, the conundrum they're in. I mean, the difficulty they're in. The players obviously have a right, and they want to make a statement, and they should do that. But they should also understand that, and I'm sure the NFL owners understand that the huge swaths of the military feel offended by this. Huge swaths of conservative Americans who are pro football fans may opt not to participate by buying tickets or by turning off the TV on Sunday. There's a huge issue there for that entire league. That's going to be interesting to see how they navigate it and what the impacts are going to be long term.
All right. Well, we'll keep an eye on that and see what happens with Colonel Etu and any other additional fallout. We're going to be covering another issue for quite some time, Mike. I can just see it now. That has to do with the auto insurance proposal that Speaker Leonard and Mike Duggan, the mayor of Detroit, put out. We're going to have hearings on it this week. Things look kind of favorable in the committee, but this is going to be a tough sell, I think, for the entire House when it gets on the floor.
You had a sizable coalition of lawmakers who came out with an alternative plan. There's a key issue, and that's the lifetime benefits should you have a catastrophic injury. That's going to be a key point of battle. Don't think that the Republicans can pass no-fault reform without getting a chunk of Democratic votes. I think that's a large part of why you saw the driver responsibility fees package come out.
You're right, too.
I think there's some horse trading going on there.
Did you see who the sponsors were on those driver responsibility
fees? Oh, yeah.
Vulnerable Republicans and Leslie Love and Sylvia Santana, both of whom are supportive of where the speaker is going, and Mayor Mike Duggan.
Yes. And so it's an interesting coalition, and it will be interesting to see how it plays out. It's good to see both are on the agenda for a resolution, but I think there's some horse trading that has to go on here to get it.
Jack, I want to get your thoughts on this because you covered the House for several years. As far as I know, this is the closest we've gotten in the House to something that could actually pass the chamber.
Well, yeah, because it's got a rate cut in it. I mean, how the heck do you go back to the voters, next year and ignore the fact that you voted against a rate cut? That automatically puts the person on the defensive if they're not going to be for this. I think that helps give this legs, although ironically, that's the big problem that the Senate has with it, apparently, in terms of at least through Senate Majority Leader Arlen Meekoff, is the fact that you shouldn't mandate rate cuts, blah, 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 et cetera. But I just think the minute you start talking rate cut, the closer it gets to that next election, the harder it becomes to turn your back on something like that.
All of a sudden, Tom Leonard's looking crazy like a fox. He put up that vote, John, on the income tax cut. It didn't pass. But what does that show you?
This is very different, though, than that vote, because he's opened it up. I mean, look, you've got Leonard on one side. You've got the mayor of the city of Detroit on his side. You've got the business community on his side. You're going to get a fairly good support among some Democrats, not all, but some Democrats. This is not the same as the income tax vote, because the income tax vote was just Republicans, and it was too easy to shut it down.
No,
I think he's got a nice path, a nice combination, a nice coalition going on this. I think it gets through the House. The question is, where does it go then?
Well, let's not count our chickens before they're hatched here. I think that there is going to be some arm twisting, some deals in order to get to 55 votes, assuming that he can get a vote before mid-November when the number gets to 56. But be that as it may, look, he's willing to put up a vote on the board, let it sit up there, and if it fails, close the board. Let mm-hmm. people live with it. Live with the fact that you voted no on a 30% rate cut and see how that plays. That's what I'm telling. That's where I think that's the connection here I see. It's not, surely it's not the same issue, but he's willing to put something up on the board. He made this one bill. Right? I mean, this isn't a package of seven bills where you can say, well, I like this one, but I don't like that one. Uh-uh. You get one shot. We're reforming the insurance code, 78 pages of it. Put it up. If you don't like part of it, go ahead and vote no. see how that plays.
It's the right time to do it. I mean, you want to do this if you're Leonard before next April when the various House members find out whether or not they have serious primary competition. This is when you want them voting, when they don't know.
All right. Well, buckle up, Mike, because we could have a few hearings in House insurance between now and whenever we decide to take this up. Interesting. I was taking a look at the House Insurance Committee, and they do have a majority of the people who are on the committee were also at the press conference on last Tuesday.
Interesting. Yeah. It all begins tomorrow for a hearing at 9 o'clock.
All right, let's change the page here with Representative Sheldon Neely.
Joining me on the other end of the line is State Representative Sheldon Neely from Flint. He is the chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. Thanks for joining us on the podcast today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Well, let's get to the first subject that I'm sure has consumed a lot of your time the last week here, and that is Colonel Etu and the repost that she did of the meme on Facebook last week. Have you been able to speak with Governor Snyder or the Colonel yet on what went down there and had a sit-down, as I know that your caucus has attempted to do?
Well, they have yet to receive positively a request to a meeting. They have communicated back that they will be open to having a meeting, but the date has not yet been set. We're working toward that goal to talk to the governor as well as the colonel.
What do you hope to accomplish if you guys were able to have a sit-down?
You know, a positive communication that we can have a dialogue back and forth, so we can come up to a good, measurable resolve for the problem that we see prospectively on each side. You know, she has her right to her opinion, whether it be a post or a repost. I don't think anybody would repost any communication or anything that they did not agree with. And also we want to talk about how it plays out with the rank-and-file officers and how it can be misconstrued or to get better understanding of what her intentions were with the repost of those statements.
What is your concern? I mean, what is kind of the worst-case scenario here?
Well, the worst-case scenario is that people in the communities of color always don't have a positive engagement with law enforcement officers, and that if she sends out a communication or a post to the rank-and-file members of her department that is to oppress one's belief or the one's ability to have a positive protest in urban communities and communities of color, in low to moderate income areas, when you say something that has the ability to oppress one's First Amendment rights to have a protest or freedom of speech.
And the best case scenario, I mean, maybe she was just ambivalent to what she was doing and thought in general she was being patriotic to just say folks should stand for the national anthem.
Being patriotic, you know, we have many community patriots, and throughout history tells us that community patriots at the highest level, or patriots of the United States of America at the highest levels, have always faced some criticism. Rosa Parks sat down on a bus. She is one of our treasures nationally. Martin Luther King engaged in positive protest. People sat at lunch counters as a part of protest. And so for her to try to define what patriotism is at this particular time, I think history will vindicate those that engage in a particular protest, especially when rough friends are on. But from her position, she should have not done that. At the very least, she should have not done that. And moving forward, and we as the Michigan Legislative Black Caucus and other members that have come on board, like Mayor Duggan, Warren Evans, NAACP, ACLU, and other entities of like thinking, at the very least, we should have be able to sit down with her and have a dialogue with her and the governor to figure out how we move forward in a positive way that where people's rights are not infringed upon by her comments.
Is this a situation where if she doesn't resign, you guys didn't get what you wanted? I mean, is it resign or nothing?
No, not at all. We have other issues. We've been trying to get more members on that police force of color, more people in the supervisory positions of color. I mean, but it's very reflective of what the governor has in his cabinet. There's not a lot of people of color. There's not a lot of diversity there, and there's no one there close in close proximity to them to tell them how people of color may feel, communities of color may feel, how they may feel oppressed, or when they're doing something that may not be intended to be oppressive or discriminatory. They may not know what's going on, so they need somebody close to them to be able to tell them when they are potentially offending someone or potentially infringing upon someone's rights.
You guys made a statement, and I'm talking about the Legislative Black Caucus, and your fellow House Democrats made a statement 2 days last week when you locked arms during the Pledge of Allegiance. How long do you see that protest continuing?
Well, it was something organic. It was nothing planned. It was nothing from the Michigan Legislative Black Caucus. It was from legislators of all creeds and colors alike. It was something organically that said that we wanted to reach out and touch one another, much like we do in church for prayer, much like we do when we're consoling individuals that have been offended or hurt, potentially going through a very difficult situation. So it wasn't a protest. I wouldn't qualify it as a protest, but okay. It was more symbolic of supporting one another during a very challenging time.
How long do you see this going on, or do you even know?
Now, I have no idea, but I do know that until we get a positive resolve, until people are willing to sit down like the governor or like the colonel, to be willing to sit down and have a dialogue and not be so dismissive of one's feelings or one's ability to have freedom of speech, I think it will continue to happen. I think people will continue to have the feeling. And if we don't have that dialogue, if we don't have that sit down, if we don't have that meeting of the minds, I don't know where we go from here. But it's a very disappointing place when you have those type of comments that's been deemed by everyone to be very offensive, very dismissive of one's rights, constitutional rights, the rights that's guaranteed to all Americans to be able to have freedom of speech. For one in that position to oppress that, it gives us pause and concern about that person leading the largest law enforcement entity inside of the state of Michigan. To watch that happen and no redress or corrective action being taken, it should be very alarming to every American citizen, not only in Michigan, but in our country.
You've probably heard some response that you've gotten from some of your colleagues on the other side of the aisle who see it as being disrespectful not to put the hand over the heart and to say the Pledge of Allegiance. How would you respond to those concerns?
They're trying to define a situation from a poor situation of a commander. That's where the nucleus of this whole problem started. No one on my side of the floor refused to put their hand over their heart. No one on my side of the floor refused to stand. Only thing we did was lock arms with one another. If they're offended by that and it said nothing to what the comments of the colonel was, it said nothing to the comments or the actions, the young man that was killed in Detroit by being tasered while moving on a vehicle, a 15-year-old young man's life snuffed out. If they said nothing to those things, I would ask them to say nothing to what they view to be disrespectful in the House. So if they have little comment on those tragedies, they should have no comment at all.
Let's kind of move on to a related issue, and that is a couple of weeks ago, the Michigan State Police did change their policy in regards to pursuit so that it more aligns with a national policy to not pursue people who are fleeing from misdemeanors. It would have to be a felony type situation before they go after somebody. Wanted to get your response to that because it seems like it was a policy that was kind of slipped in there, a change that happened after that incident you just mentioned in the city of Detroit.
I would say a policy visited 3 years too late, 5 lives too late, a policy where people died and the failures kept coming. And under the leadership of this particular colonel, they said they did not. They stood fast upon their failed policy. 1 life, 2 lives, 3 lives, 4 lives, 5 lives, multiple injuries later, they decided to change the policy. But when did it come to be important to them? So I talk about the leadership or the lack thereof leadership or the lack of concern for communities of color where these things happen. They happen in black communities. These failures happen there. But the policies were not changed before these fatalities happened in these communities. And so the question is that we ponder upon, did it matter enough to them to visit us before? Were they unaware of it? I say I know they were aware of it because I had been trying to meet with this particular colonel related to these issues for 2 years. She's never met with me. She's never had a dialogue with me. They buried the legislation that could have saved these lives, saved the traumatic experience the families are going through and still are ongoing in the state of Michigan, but they failed to do so. But only now, after this last life was lost, that criminal charges could be pending against those state troopers, that they decide to change this policy. But we still need to protect residents across the state of Michigan and put this into statute. So therefore, when we have another commander that thinks that this is not a good policy, they change the policy. So I think it's a good move that the policy was changed, that was done late. It's a move that was done late enough to where people have been negatively impacted throughout the state of Michigan. And I spoke to the earlier point about having somebody of color in leadership, having somebody of color that you can reference to have a dialogue with, to find out what's going on in these urban communities like Detroit, Pontiac, Saginaw, Flint, Highland Park, Benton Harbor, these communities in which they have taken an oath to govern and protect. They failed them at the highest level, these innocent families that lost loved ones as a byproduct of failed policy.
Clearly a state representative out of Flint, so you've had reason to talk with the governor about the Flint water crisis. How many times have you tried to get a meeting with the governor?
As it relates to which issue, the water issue?
Any issue. Let's take it all together. Since you've been a state rep, how many times have you tried to meet with the governor?
Well, I've met with the governor maybe on four different occasions as it relates on these various issues as it relates to water and the Chase policy. But I sat down with his administration at least another half a dozen times talking about these issues, the very serious issues. But it really speaks to a mindset or a mentality to whereby if they decide to move forward and do different things without input, without open dialogue, without real concern, it was very problematic for communities that seems like they've been forgotten by this administration and by their governor. And
that's kind of the point I'm trying to get to is, do you think that Governor Snyder, just in general, is responsive to your concerns and the concerns of your constituents?
Well, we have to look back, and they say hindsight is 2020. So we have to look at after failures, what has happened after the failures. I mean, we've seen a governor that has many of his staff that has performed poorly, made poor decisions, and not much has happened. I've seen no terminations. Nick Lyons, who is over the Department of Health and Human Services, is currently under indictment from the Attorney General Bill Schuette, currently for manslaughter. He has not been removed from his post serving the people. At the very least, if not removal, and I believe in due process, I believe everybody's innocent until proven guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. I want to grant that to everyone and make sure that he is also afforded that as well. But at the very least, to inspire confidence amongst the Michiganders for a person to be indicted, you know, at least until he has his trial, move him to a position of not in leadership, but move him off to the side so people won't lose confidence in that particular department, the workers and the people that they serve. That person has not been removed. Multiple indictments have been forwarded from the Attorney General as it relates to the water crisis inside the city of Flint. To my knowledge, no one has been terminated by the governor's hand. Even in this instance, we know that the police colonel's comments were not viewed upon favorably by the governor and or his direct immediate supervisory staff, but yet and still we have yet to see what type of punishments will be administered, if not termination. So it doesn't inspire confidence, and if we look back, you know, with hindsight, it doesn't inspire confidence, and moving forward, it doesn't inspire confidence.
So to my original question, if you think the governor is responsive, what would you say? In some cases, in some issues, maybe not this issue?
We have to look back at the, forgive the oxymoron, the recent past has the governor effectively responded correctly to these situations as we are looking at it? The jury's still out on the colonel, Ichu. The jury's still out on Nick Lyons, the head of the Department of Health and Human Services. And so I will reserve my opinion. I will lean to what his actions would dictate. I will want to see what's going to happen here before I make judgment.
Okay. Sounds good. Last question I wanted to talk to you about. Have you given a lot of thought or any thought at all yet to this proposal that Tom Leonard, the Speaker of the House, and Mayor Mike Duggan have put on the table in regards to reforms to no fault in an attempt to try and lower the auto insurance rates?
Well, I'm open to all dialogue as it relates to the proposal that was given forwarded by Tom Leonard and Mike Duggan. I think it has some merit there. I think it needs some more work, but I'm willing to work and sit down with those individuals to give my input where I can to try to make their proposal stronger. But the jury's still out as it relates to what's going to happen. There's still some moving pieces to that, but I am one. I stand open to more dialogue and to more perfection to try to perfect their proposal if it's the proposal that we're going to have to make a decision on.
All right. Sounds good. Representative Sheldon Neely from Flint, chair of the Legislative Black Caucus. Thanks for being on our podcast today.
Thank you for having me. God bless.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. You know, guys, we waited just long enough, and the mower is gone. We have no mower.
All right, let's begin podcasting.
No, well, we didn't have the mower at the very beginning. We waited just long enough until it ended, and now it has ended.
Kyle, I think it's just one of these pet peeve things for you. I think you listened to a previous recording of the mower, and it didn't come up. So really, it just bothers you.
It does bother me. When we get our new studio, then it will never bother me again.
There you go.
Well, look at that padded walls for sound.
Yeah, we're working on it right now.
So on and so forth.
It's in the works, right, John?
We're working on it.
Yeah, see, so there it is. All right, quick, Jack, your prediction for Michigan State this weekend.
Oh,
Give me a score.
I'll take Michigan 36-10.
Ooh, boy, he's right around the same. I was 28-6, Michigan.
I'm sorry, guys. It's not going to go that way. It's going to be Michigan State by a field goal.
Wow. Okay. Low scoring or high scoring?
Low scoring.
All right. Give it, what, 17-14, something like that?
Something like that.
All right, Jacob.
I haven't been able to watch Michigan much this year, so I've only really seen State's flaws. So
That means you'll probably be more dead on then.
I probably have to go with U of M in this one. U of M at home. State's been a little shaky, so I don't know. 23-7, Michigan.
Mike, do you care?
Michigan 21-14.
All right, a little closer. All right, we'll see who's the Swami. We'll put it on the board, and we'll play the State fight song if they go ahead and what do we just play right now? Here, let's play.
My question on 21-14 with Michigan and their problem in the red zone, but having the best, arguably the best field goal kicker in the country, is that 7 field goals for the 21?
There we go. That's analysis from Jack. All right. That's going to do it for this week's edition of the MERS Monday podcast. Thanks to AT&T for this and all our other podcasts. Thank you for sponsoring. Until next week, I'm Kyle Malin. Take care.